Thank you, and thank you for including me. I work very closely and have worked very closely with IRBs for the almost 20 years now, and so what I wanted to do is lay down some of the groundwork that IRBs are working with and thinking about, the things that impact them, and then just briefly contrast that with industry and commercial entities and how they manage our data. This is a short list of regulations that IRBs need to be familiar with. The bottom one, HIPAA, has research regulations for those of us who work in the biomedical world. The 21 code is for FDA-regulated materials, but the common rule, 45 CFR 46, has actually been adopted by 15 federal agencies. In some cases, absolute. In other cases, they've added additional issues for us to consider. This makes it pretty tricky for research. This makes it pretty tricky for IRBs, knowing where you're standing at any given time. The common rule, as I mentioned, is for federally funded research, but many IRBs use it as a platform for any research because obviously we're seeing a lot of research that isn't funded more and more these days. FDA is pretty clear. HIPAA has been an absolute challenge since 2003 when it was introduced into the biomedical research world. We are still struggling with when and how and the nuances and where it butts up against the common rule and the FDA regulations. One of the things that I wanted to remind everyone, and we've already been reminded, is that risks are inherent in research. In some cases, they are minimal to almost none, but the expectation is that they are there. There is a category of research that is not required to be reviewed by the IRB. There's a short list that is exempt, and in order to be exempt, it is so minimal that we don't really and truly have to send it to the IRB for review, but most places do, and it gives us some satisfaction that we know what kind of work is going on. But for research that is reviewable by the IRB, there are seven criteria that we have to consider, and two of them deal with specifically with risk, and not that we remove all risk, but that we look at the risk and the balance between what we're doing, what we're exposing people to, and how we've considered that and set it up so that if there's risk in the research, we are exposing people to as little or as minimal risk as possible. Another thing we have to consider to make the research approvable is that the risks are reasonable in relation to the anticipated benefits. An important clause, if any. Not all research has direct benefit to subjects. Some is going to be research that we're going to build on in the future. We're going to share data. We're going to share ideas. We're going to do something at the next step. But understanding that, again, what we're asking people to consider or sometimes what we're doing with their information without their knowledge is reasonable, and the risk that we're posing by this research is reasonable in anticipation of future benefit. And then when appropriate, again, important clause, when appropriate, we have adequate provisions to protect privacy of subjects and the confidentiality of their data. So there's a whole spectrum of research and situations where what we're asking people to do or participate in or protect may be protected in as simply as keeping something on an Excel spreadsheet with a password protection, and then we have the other end of the spectrum where people are dealing with very personal, very identifiable data, and we want to make sure that what we're doing and the way we're looking after those data and those individuals is really respecting and doing the most we can for them. But the responsibility lies not just with the IRB or the researcher, but with the institutions as well, and that we set up resources and we set up a system that allows people to work together, that allow us to problem solve together, and that ultimately what we're doing really helps push the research forward while protecting the individuals whose data we're using, while protecting the individuals who are participating in the research. But I have to tell you that no amount of regulation stops the bad guys, and there are a few. And we do this all based on trust. We trust that we're doing the right thing, that what we approve is the right thing, and going forward that we monitor and check that it's the right thing. And so the questions that we're asking, there are other criteria. There's a whole bunch around informed consent, which is another day or two of discussion. But considerations just around data and data protection. I mean, really, IRBs are thinking about what data are we looking at and talking about and thinking about that need protection, and what are the risks related to exposure, and from whom are we protecting these data? IRBs can generally start with their researchers and the person that's coming to them with the idea and with the approach or the question, and working with them both on the risk assessment and the risk management plan. They might seek opinions from outside. Institutions will implement review processes to look at ongoing research to assure that we're sticking with the agreed upon plan. And again, you know, these can be anything from super simple processes to very complex and very complicated research. But then we get into trouble because we try to collaborate with other institutions across town, across state, and across the country. And because we all have different thresholds for risk and we all have different interpretations of regulations, one IRB said this is not a big deal, another IRB said it's such a big deal that you can't participate with that guy's IRB. And this is really slowing things down, and we're seeing researchers spending weeks, if not months, just sorting through and trying to negotiate this process. And here is a case where additional regulation isn't going to help us, but boy, we could use some guidance. And how do we think about risk, and how do we think about some of these issues, especially when we see more and more collaborations being attempted at gathering just large, extremely large amounts of data to be housed at one institution or another. Contrast that with industry. We are seeing more and more in clinical trial agreements where our industry sponsors are telling us, we will take these data, they are our data, and we will use them the way we want. We'll tell our subjects that, and if they don't want to participate in our drug trial, we're fine with that. That's an absolutely different approach than we've taken over the last years, and we're very, very surprised to hear this, but we're coming to terms with this. And again, as a consumer, and things that we've noted already, recently looking for a very important Lego gift for my grandson, went to do some legitimate work on the web, and noticed on the right-hand panel of the New York Times article I was looking at, there was another ad for Lego. Unbelievable. Something that I found a little more startling, though, was several years ago, turning 50, suddenly I get this catalog in the mail. I did not sign up for this catalog, for mature women. It had a lot of elastic waist pants and crepe-soled shoes. I was horrified, and then I was angry. How could they know? It was my birthday. How did they know it was that old? But clearly, industry has an increasing access to our data. I found this interesting website. This is a data broker who claims to have tremendous amounts of personal data about us, including our marital status, our income, our education level. Now, I was going to log in and see what they had about me to make sure it was actually accurate, but they wanted too much information for me to log in and see if what they had was actually accurate. And so here's a case where I actually wouldn't know how to go to this company and say, hey, you don't have permission to use my information, because clicking and clicking and clicking, I never did get to the privacy policy. I never did get to the opt-out page. There are people who are not quite so sophisticated, but who will cast wide nets through public records and collect information about us. So I put my name in to see what would come back, and it was very, very interesting. Some of it probably was me. I just looked at the first tier. I didn't pay for the second tier, but some of it clearly wasn't. And so, again, we have people collecting and gathering information, offering it up for use for free, or in this case, if you wanted to go further, for sale. And their opt-out was a little bit easier to find. However, they're using public records. So there, some of that is information that I cannot control. The Facebook example is absolutely famous. Facebook does sell ads and ad space based on our likes, our clicks, our relationships. It is surprising what people will share, but this is the world that we live in now. And is this the new Is this one of our new considerations for risk? Is it what people are willing to tolerate and share in a public site? I wanted to just mention two things about the proposed changes to the common rule. Last year, the government proposed some changes to make some of the regulations more restrictive. And one of the things they want to do is add security protections because they believe that IRBs don't know what they're doing. I would suggest to you that we do. I would suggest to you that we could use a lot more guidance, but we don't need more regulation. And one of the things to me that was most critical that the government is proposing is that even that small group of research, of which there is a great deal, but those five categories of research that are now exempt, they would also require some potentially extreme data protection rules that would really limit a lot of what we could do. So I would say in summary that that we do have appropriate safeguards for human subjects research. Additional regulations aren't going to change anything. Adding complexity and more rules will make it far more difficult and will really give us an opportunity to fail. I'm making a plea for guidelines, and I hope that this would be an opportunity and an area where you could offer us suggestions. Thank you.
Thanks, Deborah.